Be seated, please. The court is now ready to hear argument in 080667 Eberhard Samlowski, M.D. versus Carol Wooten.
May it please the court, Ms. Ellington will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Chief Justice, may it please the court. The only issue presented here today is whether or not it was a clear abuse of discretion for the trial court to deny an extension, a 30-day extension, for the plaintiff to cure a deficient report. Now, there's no question that the trial court and the 10th Court of Appeals in its entirety agreed that this report was not a good faith effort. Based on the statutory language of 74.351, it was then appropriate and within the court's discretion and indeed mandatory that the case be dismissed.
Was there any explanation as to why it should be dismissed?
Why what?
Why the case should be dismissed?
Why it should be dismissed?
Was there any explanation
Sorry.
In the order by the trial court why the case should be dismissed?
Yes. The order specifically states that the report did not comply with the statutory requirements of 74.351, was not a good faith effort, that is specifically in the order, and that the case would be dismissed.
Is that enough?
Yes.
If, counsel, if the report is not a good faith effort, then what is the basis then for moving forward to consider the deficiency and whether a 30-day extension is appropriate?
Well, the statute allows that. The statute specifically says that the court may grant a 30-day extension if the report is found to be deficient.
Is this report so deficient that it does not constitute a report at all?
Well, I know that that is an issue before this court on numerous occasions. And I have to say in all honesty that the reports that have been considered by the court to be no report were much less than this one.
Well, I don't think you can argue that this report is adequate as to the standard of care, but we're talking about causation.
Right.
The conclusory allegations in the report, do they amount to no report as to that element, or are they simply deficient?
It is my opinion that the causation language in this report is so weak and in no way connected to any of the 9 pages of negligent acts that are listed in the report that it does constitute no report. I mean, that's one way. I look at this two ways. One way is that the causation issue is so lacking in this report that it constitutes no report, and therefore the court basically does not have even the discretion to give a 30-day extension. On the other hand, if the court finds that it is sufficient enough to constitute some report, but it is deficient, then the burden is not on the defendant to establish that there should not be an extension given, as the Waco Court of Appeals has said, but that it is the burden on the defendant to establish that there is, on the plaintiff, to establish that there is some reason that an extension should be given. And I think that's the way that the Court of Appeals cases that I've cited and that the Waco Court cited have decided this case, and that is there some evidence in the record that an extension should be given?
Well, here's where I get confused.
Okay.
Because it seems to me that the definition of an objective good faith effort equals a good report. In other words, the good faith effort requires that you address standard of care breach and causation, that you do it with sufficient specificity to inform the defendant of the conduct that's called into question, and to allow the trial court to conclude the claims have merit. Well, if it meets all those things, it's never going to be deficient. So why would you ever need the cure?
Why would you ever what?
Why do we need the cure provision? If to be a good faith effort, it's got to be 100% and meet the requirements of being a good report, then it strikes me the ability to amend is just surplusage.
Well, yeah, I guess you'd have to ask the legislature why they put that provision in there.
But that's your argument, right? That 30-day cure provision is surplusage because
is that
it is not consistent with the definition of a good faith report.
So
that if there is anything missing in a report that makes it less than a completely adequate report, then the trial court would have no discretion to grant a 30-day period for the claimant to cure that deficiency.
Yes, that is my position.
But the statute says the trial court has a 30-day cure. You understand what
yes.
the
and in an attempt to try and reconcile this and try to give the court some way in which to apply this statute until and unless it is changed, it is my position that in the event that there is a deficient report and it is not a good faith effort, but there is some extraneous outside issues that may be in the record,
that's
such
not,
as well. What I guess what I'm saying
of the cure statute,
right?
That's your standard, but the legislature did create a cure. But if you read the good faith effort requirement, literally the way you're proposing, there could never be a cure. And so, how do we reconcile those two? Shouldn't we just look at whether the trial court can determine that the claims have merit?
I'm sorry, that the trial court what?
The trial court needs enough to determine that the claims have merit. And we can tell here from the depth of this report enough to know that there's some basis. It's not a frivolous claim. The purpose is to weed out frivolous claims.
I think that the, you know, if we look, I think we look at the history of this extension provision. If you look at the previous statute, 4590I, it was, you know, much easier way to get an extension. In fact, 4590I provided that you could get an extension even if you hadn't even filed a report, that, you know, if there were outside circumstances that were available to be reviewed by the court, then the plaintiff could even get an extension even if they hadn't filed an expert report. Clearly, that's been eliminated. And I think that the language in the statute was placed there to give some out, some authority to the trial court if there were extenuating circumstances of some sort that would allow them to let the plaintiff amend or fix the report in some way.
But if these don't satisfy extenuating circumstances, what would?
There was no record of the hearing. There is no record of the hearing or anything like that that the court could rule upon. So, you know, it's my position that there is no evidence before the court that would allow the court to determine that there were some other circumstances. And the reason that I bring that up is if you look at the cases that, let me get to those, the cases that are cited by the Waco Court of Appeals, as well as the cases that I've cited in my brief, they all come to the conclusion, none of them come to the conclusion that it was an abuse of discretion not to grant the 30-day extension. They all have the language in them that says there is no evidence in the record that it was an abuse of discretion not to grant the 30-day extension.
You said there must be some extenuating circumstance for the 30-day extension
well,
to apply. What's an extraordinary circumstance? I mean, that doesn't appear to be the intent of the statute. It appears to, as Justice O'Neill said, to make sure that there are no frivolous litigations filed. And if you comply 99% with the first part and you screw up on the 1%, we're going to give you, the trial judge is going to give you an opportunity to cure that. What is so wrong with that?
Well, it is my position that once you cross that threshold of not being a good faith effort, then you can't cure it. Now,
so it
I have
be,
to
so
reconcile.
It would be an abuse of discretion for the trial court to grant a 30-day extension.
To grant a 30-day extension. That's my position, and that's what I feel. But I am trying in an attempt to, in some way.
When the expert report is deficient in some respect, the trial court has no discretion but to dismiss.
Yes.
Despite the 30-day cure language.
Yes.
So what does it mean? What does the legislature mean, getting back to where we started earlier on, that a trial court has discretion to give a one-time 30-day extension to correct deficiencies in the report? What does that mean then?
Well, the legislature did not give us any help in that regard. As I said in the previous statute, it had some guidelines, you know, showing good cause, not accident or mistake. That has all been taken away, and it's just simply may grant a 30-day extension. And I think that that's put in there just because the legislature was attempting to, although it's a pretty straightforward bar with regard to the definition of good faith.
What if it were deficient? What if it had all the elements, the standard of care and causation and injury, et cetera, but there was a misnomer in the report
itself.
Makes it technically a problem? Would there be discretion then to give a 30-day extension? Is that the only way?
Well, we have no cases on this, and this would has. I'm sure that's why we're here. But I think that if it was such a minor thing as a misnomer, that, you know, that would be allowed to be changed. That would be allowed to be
okay,
changed.
So if there is some discretion, then the question now is whether it is reviewable. Can we look at what the trial court did and determine whether there was an abuse of discretion in denying a ground? And here, there's a broad statement. I found it wasn't a good faith effort because it was, you know, not an adequate report, I mean, generally speaking. But could the trial court deny a motion to cure based on other irrelevant factors? Doesn't like the claimant, doesn't like the claimant's lawyer. Factors that have nothing to do with the merits or the statute. How would that be reviewable?
I think that it has to be, you have to be able to appeal the failure to grant a 30-day extension as a final judgment. And I think that, and just as these cases that I referred to in my brief, as well as the Waco Court of Appeals refer to, again, none of those cases find that it's an abuse of discretion, but they do state and imply in their dicta that there might be some evidence of abuse of discretion by the trial court that could be presented to the Court of Appeal in order for them to evaluate whether or not it was an abuse of discretion. You do not have anything in that issue here. I mean, you don't have any record of any extenuating circumstances, or the reason I say that is in the, let's say for instance, in the Hardy versus Marsh case, which is the Texarkana case I cite. In that case, they specifically state that the plaintiff had plenty of time to get an expert. In another case, Bosch versus Wilbarger, which is out of the Amarillo court, they waited too long to file their objection or their, request for an extension. I think that the courts were looking for some way that they could say that there, you know, either is or is not some reason to grant an extension. And I think
what about in this case, though? You have a report that's pretty thorough. You have 9 breaches, and then you have 3 aspects that go to causation. Why isn't that a fair summary? Why couldn't the trial court look at this and determine that these claims have merit? And it's basically somewhat deficient because it needs a little bit more elaboration on the causation element.
If you look,
I think that when you look at it, the report talks about developing life-threatening complications. as a result of the breaches above. Are you saying that he had to, that count, that the doctor had to tie in each breach to each specific injury?
That is what is so frustrating.
And if so, again, why isn't the failure to do so simply a deficiency?
That's what's so frustrating about this report. It's 9 pages long, and you plow through all of this language, but when you really get down to what is the causation language, it specifically states that, you know, all of this is a negligence on the part of Dr. Samlowski, and that such negligence proximate cause of Ms. Wooten's developing multiple life-threatening complications that resulted in multiple but avoidable operations, multi-organ failure with permanent damage. Nowhere in this report does it specifically connect any of the actions of Dr. Samlowski.
But why isn't that a deficiency? Why isn't what's there enough to be a fair summary, such as to constitute a good faith effort, and then move to the next prong, which is it so deficient that it's no report, or is it simply deficient and we should go back and give them 30 days to connect it? Why is it in this report that's not enough?
I think that the report is deficient to the extent that it is not a good faith effort. And that's what the Court of Appeals even agreed with. The Court of Appeals attempted to, we haven't even talked about this, but the Court of Appeals attempted to establish a new standard, which is a good faith attempt as opposed to a good faith effort. And it's just as Chief Justice Gray in his dissent indicated that he didn't see that that could possibly be a distinction with a difference, and I agree with that.
But you agree we're going to have to figure out some way to reconcile the cure provision,
right,
and the good faith attempt.
And I think
it strikes me that the whole Health Care Liability Act says, here's the purpose of the act, and I don't remember the language, I wish I had it in front of me, but something about to be interpreted so as to not unnecessarily restrict claims. Why can't we use that piece to bridge the gap between these two and not completely read out the cure provision?
Well, and I agree with you on that, as far as saying that there are some circumstances where an extension may be granted. That's what the statute says, even though it's not a good faith effort, and as in this case. But it's not the burden, as the Waco court said, it's not the burden of the defendant to establish that there is a reason not to grant the extension. It is on the plaintiff to establish that there is some reason to grant the extension.
Actually, it's what they said, we're talking about abuse of discretion.
Right.
I mean, denied, and the question is, did it abuse its discretion by denying?
How can you say the trial court abused their discretion when you don't have a record before you that would establish any reason why an extension should be granted? You start with the fact that it is a good faith effort. Then it can be dismissed.
I didn't mean to extend your time. You're running into your
I'm running out of time.
In honor of Justice Brister, we ask the questions.
Thank you, counsel. The court is now ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. McCoy will present argument for the respondent.
Chief Justice, honorable members of the court, and privileged guests, may it please the court. First of all, I'm contrary to what my brief said, I do concede that there is a deficiency in the report. Now, the first three times I read it, I didn't spot it. And it wasn't until I got the objection and then read 130 cases that had been decided over about a 9-year period, most of which were decided in the time period after House Bill 4, that I finally came to the conclusion that, yes, there was a defect in this report. But I'd like for the court to look at this in the context of the real world, and that is this. When we get one of these cases, I'm not going into the details of the screening process in my office, I kind of outlined it in my brief, I'd like for you to look at it from Dr. Patman's standpoint. Here we have a person who teaches at UT in Dallas. He also is a staff member at Baylor College of Medicine, where he takes residents and they participate in surgeries with him. So he's teaching Baylor medical students. He also has an active surgical practice in this process. And essentially his primary focus is on his teaching duties, his medical students, and his patients. Way down on his list of priorities is my expert witness report. We send him a big stack of medical records. He goes through them thoroughly. He tells us by phone that he thinks that there's a serious case here and that it would actually be worth our while for him to thoroughly review it and to write a report.
Let's grant you that he okay. writes what he thinks is a thorough report.
Right.
I think the question we're struggling with is what are the parameters of the
I agree.
We address the trial court's discretion in this regard.
Exactly. And in this case, when you read the report, though, you realize that this case has merit. It has met the test that the legislature intended to screen out frivolous lawsuits.
But isn't the question whether the trial court properly exercises discretion in this case?
Because that's the standard this court has set.
What we think,
sure.
Regardless of what you think or anybody else, the trial court is the one who made the decision.
Correct.
And the trial court, as I understand the statute, when there's a defect, the statute mandates dismissal. But the statute says the trial court may grant an extension.
That is
so
correct.
So I guess the question that comes to mind is, how does the trial court who made this, it's all in the trial court's discretion, had a statute that said you shall dismiss.
Right.
And so the trial court shall dismiss. And how did he abuse his discretion by following that mandate?
The problem is that neither the legislature nor the courts have as yet set up some guidelines for the trial judge to go by. In this case, and granted there is no record because actually we were at a docket call and nobody asked for a court report. That was probably maybe my fault as it turned out, but I could not anticipate since every other instance, of course, I've only had one case where a judge has found a record to be inadequate and he gave me 30 days to cure. But that was a different situation. That was in Harris County where you have millions of people. The odds of the judge and the doctor knowing each other are nil. And then you have a small town of Cleburne of 30,000 people where we discover afterwards that the doctor's wife and the judge's wife are close friends, but that's not an issue in this case. We briefed it. We did not put it in our brief. But you have a situation, though, where in the context of the real world again, the judge actually never even considered the 30-day extension. Well, there was very little discussion. Yes.
Let me ask you a question, though, about the abuse of discretion and the judge having abused its discretion by failing to grant the 30-day extension. You
right.
led your argument with a recitation of all of the qualifications and the expertise of
right.
Dr. Patman. You also said this is low on his priority. Is that one of the factors the court could have considered? Here we have a doctor that knows exactly what is required, knows exactly what causation means, and simply failed to put it in this report. And how is that an abuse of discretion if that's one of the factors
well,
the court considered?
Well, the problem is that the doctor doesn't know what the law requires about the exactitude of his report.
You have 9 complaints about the
correct.
Treatment. And you have life-threatening complications, avoidable operations,
right.
et cetera. How difficult would it have been to tie any of those 9 breaches to the avoidable operations or the organ failure or the multiple
right.
hospital admissions?
Well, after we sent these to him, essentially we got the report. There was just a very short time between there and the end of the 120 days. And with Dr. Patman's schedule, it would have taken me another several months to have gotten a cure from him as a matter of practicality. But with regard to the issue of, there's case law that says that the court shouldn't shouldn't arbitrarily or unreasonably withhold a 30-day extension. And in this case,
we're trying to get some standards.
Exactly.
But no, we need some standards. We don't want to just flip a coin here. What should inform the trial judge's decision? You know, the interesting thing about this report, you read all the way through it, and you keep expecting the doctor to say, and therefore the surgery was unnecessary. He doesn't even say that.
Right.
Maybe it wasn't.
Well, I think that was his opinion, but at the same time,
I couldn't tell by reading it. Maybe he needed to do the surgery to find out that there were these other problems and to try to correct them. Who knows?
Right.
There's no way to know.
The problem was, by the time we got the report, there wasn't really sufficient time to.
Right. But back to Justice Johnson's question.
Right.
What checklist or what ideas should the trial judge have in his mind? This is why I should, this is why I shouldn't.
Okay, I think that if, like in some of these other opinions, where the qualifications aren't there on the part of the expert, or secondly, where he's just glanced over really the three issues with a little attack here and a little attack there, and really hasn't given a well thought out analysis of any of the three, well, that's no report, and the case should be dismissed. But where he has really gone into great detail on the issues of liability, of standard of care, and the breach thereof, and has from time to time in his discussions of them mentioned the complications and the things that can go wrong when you don't do this. And then at the end, he does a summary of it that outlines the causation. I think that unless, you know, there's some really extenuating thing like you didn't ask for the 30 days until 9 months after, you know, the report was filed and the time was passed, which is one of the cases that we have before us, that there's, for one thing, and this is where I think that we need balance, is we have gone to the point on using the expert witness report as a means of wiping out frivolous lawsuits to the extent that what we're doing now is we're actually throwing out the good lawsuits in many cases because of technical deficiencies in the report.
Let's assume that when the hearing occurred on the question of a cure before the trial court,
correct,
that you had started out your argument in that court the way you started it out here.
Mm-hmm.
Judge, I know the expert report is defective because we don't have causation. I knew that some time ago. I'm sorry. Judge, can I have 30 days and I'll put it in there? Couldn't the trial court say, you knew that? You're the lawyer for this client. You knew that this lacked an essential element, and I'm not going to give you a cure. You should have cured that long before you came into my court. Wouldn't that be an appropriate exercise of discretion?
If we had known about that months and months and months
sure,
before,
right.
Yeah, I think that, because that's actually in one of the cases. That's actually, you know, the fact of one of the cases that they.
But we don't know what the judge's thought process was in this case.
Except what's in his order, which is in actually it's what occurred during.
Right. Well, the orders are general, but right. I mean that could have been in his thought process, and I think that would be a valid exercise. If the judge was thinking, my wife and this doctor are good friends, well, maybe that's not a good reason, and
right.
we would think that's not a good reason to deny a cure. But we don't know. Perhaps in cases like this, the judge should detail the reasons for denying.
That probably would be helpful. And I will say this, that what he said there was what he actually said in his order, that I don't think this is a good faith report, so we don't even need to get to your request for the extension. I mean, that's what occurred at the hearing. We never discussed the extension or the reasons for it or the reasons not. It was that this was a deficient, it was not a good faith effort, and he was going to rule against us. And next case, please.
But there's nothing in the record. I'm sorry.
What?
Go ahead.
But there's nothing in the record that shows one way or the other the specific reason or reasons why the trial court judge denied the extension or dismissed, or it's just devoid of any explanation?
Yes, it's the record is, other than the order itself, is devoid of explanations for failing to rule on the 30-day extension.
Well, we have a situation then where the Court of Appeals is adopting a different standard of review than what the statute says. It's not abuse of discretion that the Court of Appeals in this case looks at it and says, well, we're just going to do it all over again, because what the record shows then only is the report itself and conducts a de novo review. Isn't that what's happened here?
Well, there are actually some lawyers that are urging courts urging this court and some of their writings to do a de novo review of every medical malpractice case the way it looks, but I don't think it's a de novo review, and I don't think that's what the Court of Appeals did below. What they did is they looked at the four corners of the report and looked at the intent of the statute. And they said the intent of the statute was to weed out frivolous lawsuits. And in this case, what harm would there have been to have granted a 30-day extension? It was not going.
That's not the standard, is it? If it falls within the zone of reasonable disagreement, then the trial court has that discretion, not the Court of Appeals.
You know, it's like a ministerial act in a way. Sometimes it's just an abuse not to have rendered the act. And in this case, the fact that you have what is obviously a meritorious case, obvious to everyone, that in this case, he should have at least considered. He never even considered.
Well, except, let me ask you this.
Go ahead, Justice.
Yeah.
Counsel, the subsection C speaks to a 30-day extension when elements of the report are found deficient.
Correct.
Is there a difference between elements that are deficient and elements that are wholly non-existent? And if so, if they're wholly non-existent, do you get a do-over? Do you get a 30-day extension when the element's not even there?
I would think that reading the statute carefully, if the elements were totally non-existent and there had been no attempt to deal with the elements, then yes, that's probably dismissible, grounds for dismissal.
So this trial court, when reviewing this report, could have read what you wrote on causation and said, that amounts to nothing on this element, it's non-existent, then you don't even jump to 30 because you don't have an element that's deficient. Is that correct?
But the problem is that when you read the report, when the reasonably prudent person reads the report, or the reasonably prudent jurist reads the report, there are discussions of causation other than the conclusory statements. They're just not properly tied up.
Can we draw inferences, though, from the entire report to support the conclusory statements in the causation aspect of the report?
I think you can say that the summation was conclusory. I think that a fair reading of the report is that there was attempt on his part to discuss causation in other parts of the report, but he didn't properly tie it up in a nice, orderly fashion that's probably required by the case law.
So your argument is the element is there, it's simply deficient.
Correct.
All right.
Any further questions?
Well, I was going to ask. Well, sure. Might the trial court assume that if the doctor is not speaking to causation, it's because the doctor doesn't believe that these breaches in the standard of care caused the injury or death?
But I think from reading this report, when you read it carefully, it's clear that he does.
And why is that so? That's the part
I
missed.
Because basically,
explain to you my thinking.
Okay, sure.
Because when I read it, it seems to me to say, well, there's bad, but thank goodness it didn't result in, I mean, she was going to have all these problems anyway. And she could have gone to the Mayo Clinic or the best doctor in the world.
Right.
If this person isn't. And she would have still had the same result.
Sure. And if that had actually been his opinion, we wouldn't even have been in that court that morning. Right. But the thing is, What harm would it be to give 30 days to find out the specifics?
But that's not the standard. I mean, what harm is there to give anybody 30 days? I mean, that's
no harm. Well, in this case, though, when you read the attempt that he made in discussing those, it you come to the conclusion that the case has merit, and the and there the purpose of the statute, which is in the intent section of the legislature, which shows legislative intent, was the intent was to weed out frivolous lawsuits. And this case is more than a frivolous lawsuit, it's a case with a deficient report.
That gives us right back to where we started. I mean, where do we look for guidance? The trial court has that discretion. The trial court has broad discretion whether or not to extend it to 30 days or not.
I think that with the wide variety of opinions of judges at the trial level and their settings, when they're in that, I mean, that judge has to live with that doctor. He's got to, and so in that framework, you need more than a failure to even consider.
What should the test be? If we were to write an opinion, what should the test be? What does the doctor, what does the trial judge need to do to persuade us that there's not an abuse of discretion?
That there was no, that essentially that this case did not have merit on the face of the report.
What do you mean by, you've said that several times, if the case has merit, grant an extension. What do you mean by has merit? A case that you will win?
No, it's a case that has a chance for me to go forward with evidence to be considered by a jury.
What does that mean?
That
do you survive a summary judgment? Is that what you're saying? Do you
win you could,
in front of a jury?
Survive a summary judgment could be one test.
Of course, the statute doesn't incorporate summary judgment standards and procedures, does it?
No.
Are you arguing that the standard should be different for small towns versus large cities?
No,
I said the judge has to live with this doctor, and we should understand the practicalities of a small town.
I think, though, that the court needs to understand the practicalities of dealing with judges who are living in a small town where they probably know the doctor, going to have to live with that doctor, going to have to face him at the Kiwanis Club.
That creates a different standard throughout the state then. I mean, if you're if I'm going to Dr. Longmire in Hitchcock, Texas, and that's a different standard than going to see a doctor in Harris County.
No, it's actually supposed to be the same standard. You just should recognize that you're going to have different situations where there's a little more pressure on the judge not to grant a 30-day extension merely because of the social pressure.
Any further questions? Counsel, do you have anything further? Thank you. The court is now ready to hear rebuttal.
Number one, the standard is clear abuse of discretion. That is the standard. Number two, the court
has. That's a phrase, but we're still looking at what informs that standard. I mean,
right, no.
Many things have abusive discretion, but we don't want unfettered discretion.
I understand that.
And so we're just looking at, I think your opposing counsel has offered, I think, a reasonable solution that if you can look at it objectively and determine that it's not a frivolous suit, then why wouldn't that be a reasonable parameter to inform discretion?
Right. No, I am not saying it's unfettered. I am saying, though, that...
Could you answer my question? What's wrong with that as a standard? That if you can look at the four corners of the report objectively, and you can discern that it's not a frivolous suit, then a trial court abuses its discretion by not allowing a 30-day cure period.
Well, I don't know...
A good parameter for discretion. Nobody's given us any parameter for discretion so far, and we're looking at that. We craft those in other contexts.
Right.
And I'm proposing that to you, as your opposing counsel did, in light of the purpose of the statute, if you can objectively look at the four corners of the report and see that it's not frivolous, then why wouldn't the trial court then abuse its discretion by not granting the extension? Why is that not a reasonable standard?
Because the standard in the statute is it has to be a good faith effort. And I don't think that just looking at the four corners of the report and determining that it's not a frivolous lawsuit meets that standard. I think that the way I look at it is that the determination that it is not a good faith effort is the governor. That's where you start. And
But again, this gets us right back to the beginning, because the good faith effort means one that meets all statutory requirements.
Right.
So, I mean, that reads out the amendment. That reads out the cure period. So if we're going to try to reconcile these two, why would that not be a good statement of what should inform the trial court's discretion?
How can you, well, I guess I don't understand how you would apply this is not a frivolous lawsuit when you, for example, in this report, when you look at this report and see that there's no causation language in the report. I mean, there's language, but it doesn't connect with the negligence. How can you say that that is or is not a frivolous lawsuit? I don't know how you
all the standards. You've got negligence, you've got standard of care, you've got breach, and you've got the statement that it proximately caused her injuries. Just doesn't say how. Objectively, it covers all the elements. It doesn't say how, but shouldn't that be enough to give a 30-day extension? By granting such a short extension period, it seems like the legislature surely intended a liberal use of the amendment standard if you get to a certain point.
Yes, and I think that is what, I mean, this 30-day extension is there for a reason, and I think that's what the all of the appellate courts and all the decisions that I've cited, what they have done is they have looked to see, they've looked at the record, because there is a record, unlike this case, to determine whether or not there were extenuating circumstances, such as not having time to get the expert report, having some difficulty in getting the expert to render the report. All of what Mr. McCoy articulated in his argument, none of that is in the record.
Counsel, if the trial court had granted an extension and there was no record, and you were up here trying to say there was an abuse of discretion, isn't that where we are? The shoe's just on the other foot. In this case, seems to me like, if you didn't have a record and you were trying to say the trial court abused its discretion by granting, what are you going to argue?
Well, I can
come. And that position seems to me like we have the posture of the case makes all the difference in the world, seems like.
Well, granting of the extension would not be appealable, so I wouldn't be here.
But if you were here and trying to claim an abuse of discretion, you'd have to have the record also. I mean, somebody has to, the burden of proof has to be on someone. The burden to
yes.
bring up something up here, seems like. It seems like that's what you're saying. There's no record.
What I'm saying is that the 30-day extension is discretionary. It is not mandatory. There has to be some explanation as to why it should be granted, not why it shouldn't be granted.
And
in order for
the position, that's not your burden.
Exactly.
It's the
plaintiff's
burden.
I think my time is up.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel. The cause is submitted, and the court will take a brief recess.
All rise.